Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I am Tyler Bishop, joined alongside me, as you've come to know her, Miss Whitney Wright. Yes. Whitney, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be back. Happy International Women's Day.
Yeah, happy International Women's Day to you.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy
not,
to be
not
one.
As much to me, but
no, exactly. But yeah, it's a great day. I'm happy to be a woman. So
yeah, so I think if we look back at some of the things we've been talking about the last few weeks, it's been very AI dominated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just kind of looking at the docket for today, it looks like we've still got some of that in there. But
yeah,
it's a very interesting time to be in our industry, in yeah. our I feel like the word space is overused. But
yeah.
I mean, you know, advertising, publishing, making content, these things are pretty cool. But man, I've never felt more so like the next 3 to 4 years are going to be weird.
Yeah, I know. Especially because I think we've kind of talked about this. Like, we remember the internet evolving, but like, we were still pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, we're actually like adults when this is happening, and we're way more aware of like it
being, yeah.
especially in the industry that we're in, of course, just way more aware of like what's going on and like the changes that are going to come. I know it's literally impossible to look at the news for this podcast and not like have to talk about AI, which is fine because that's what's happening.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you want to talk about anything else, like, good luck.
It's odd too, because I think, one of the things, I was talking to somebody else that's worked in this, this business for a really long time from the UK. And he was saying, you know, I haven't talked to a single person that a year ago expecting this sort of like boom and this
yeah.
sort of like, you know, so sort of rapid acceleration. And I think that that is a big story here, which is that it doesn't seem like there was this. I mean, Google and Microsoft, we talked about in past shows, they seem like, Microsoft seems more opportunistic, but they both do seem kind of like very hurried in all of this. Like
yeah.
they weren't expecting it either.
Right. I think that progress was made with ChatGPT and they threw it out there, and then Google just all of a sudden was like, oh, we have to get our stuff out there too. Like, they weren't planning on it, you know, but then they're like, we have to stay competitive in this space. And then everybody else is also throwing out their AI. And that's actually just like a quick tidbit that I wanted to talk about is DuckDuckGo came out with their DuckDuck Assist. So it's a generative AI technology to provide more direct answers than traditional search results or other instant answers. It kind of seems the same as like snippets.
Yeah.
But you know, it's AI generated.
Yeah, it's going to be the new CBD.
Yeah.
Everything is going to be AI generated.
Yeah, right.
Even what it doesn't need to be.
It doesn't need to be, yeah.
Yeah, and I do think that is something that we will, I mean, we've kind of seen it with marketing for a long time, is people say it's AI when they mean an algorithm.
Yeah.
But sometimes an algorithm does the right job. AI is a tool, and it's a tool like anything else, where it's like, at least for now, it's the right tool for the right job.
Mm-hmm.
And with DuckDuckGo, it's like, I think that they know that they need to have something there.
Mm-hmm.
But I am of the mind that I don't think that, you know, like, AI isn't a search engine. A search engine is an AI. They probably can benefit each other a little bit. But realistically, I think everybody's thinking of, you know, Google, Microsoft, the internet, and how you find things, and what AI is going to serve in that whole like relationship, is that it's going to basically become a search engine. And I absolutely don't think that that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
I think either search engines will continue to exist in the form similar to what they are, or they will just like go out of, there'll be like a niche thing that people use every
yeah.
now and then, kind of like running a command line on a computer. It's like, there's a, you know, developers do it and programmers, but mm-hmm. the rest of the population largely doesn't.
Yeah. Do you think that with AI coming in and like the way things are progressing, that search engines would, you know, kind of become obsolete in some ways?
Is very possible. And
yeah.
I think that that's a concern that somebody like Google has. But I think I mentioned it like in our very first show back, that mm-hmm. I think one of the big things that all of us should have some kind of concern for, in the same way that we preserve our, it's going to sound how it sounds. In the same way that we preserve our environment, we need to preserve the open web.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I mean by that is that imagine if search engines go away, that's how many people find websites,
mm-hmm.
right? And a website, regardless of publishing or whatever, it gives every single person in the world the access to something, to where they can share information and get information.
Mm-hmm.
And if all of a sudden that becomes more something where it's platform-based, where you're using AI applications and, you know, things on your hardware or it relies on like a proprietary app store. I don't know if somebody would do that or not, but let's just call them Apple. you know, then all of a sudden it's like, how do you share information? Like this, getting rid of this barrier to be someone that, you know, shares information or makes a product or sells something or writes content. You know, the open web brings us this, but if, you know, there's no way to basically go out and find those things anymore easily, then it goes into the hands of basically, you know, whoever the app developers or platform developers are and, mm-hmm. you know, sort of their propensity to want to allow people to do that.
Yeah. I think it'd be a shame if search engines went out of, you know, commission. I just think that they, like you said, they're so different from AI generative, like, types of information that's given, at least now. They're, you know, AI doesn't fully give what you need sometimes.
Yeah.
You need a search engine. So,
well, what I think is actually really, I just saw this last night and I think it was announced yesterday. So I doubt you have it in here, but it goes with the DuckDuckGo thing. And that is that Slack announced a partnership with OpenAI where they're integrating OpenAI directly into Slack to where it will fetch information from the outside. You can use all the information in track in Slack to do stuff with it. There'll be add-ons and plugins, but they're calling it Einstein. So they said, you know, starting soon, everybody can put in like /Einstein and it'll do a bunch of these different commands. But with that in mind, I actually think that a sleeper for like dominance in this space could be Slack. Because you think about how many people use it professionally. Mm-hmm. It's like addicting. It's like how email used to be. Mm-hmm. And if all your AI is in there and it keeps all your professional data and conversations and contacts, it's like Slack becomes a different thing then.
Yeah, the underdog comes sweeping through. We'll see.
The underdog in a giant megalithic public company in Salesforce.
Yes. Well, getting into the topics we have, we will get back to AI a little bit later, but from What's New in Publishing, we have 70% of publishers see newsletters as an area for investment in 2023. 50% of publishers already offer between 1 and 5, and the other 50% offer more. So they kind of broke it down into 3 different types of newsletters. There's briefing newsletters, deep dives, and summaries. So, you know, briefing is daily, high frequency, deep dives, letter from the editor type things. And then summaries are similar to briefings, but they're different because they're not trying to get traffic to an app or website. They're just delivering need to know facts.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the growth of newsletters? Do you think that it's like a growing popularity thing? This is like kind of surprising to me that it's like in an area for investment, but if there's so many already, but
God, it's so funny because it literally is cyclical. So you know how like they always say like fashion trends kind of go in and out, like baggy jeans are in, they're out. Newsletters are in and out, and they have been for like since the invention of email. Mm-hmm. I remember going to a conference at DigiDay in Vail. I think it was maybe 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when we were there, I remember somebody getting up on stage and they were talking about basically owning their audience and like all this different stuff. And then they got asked questions afterwards and somebody's like, so what you're really describing is emailing the people that sign up. And they were like, well, it's more than that. It's this and that. And they're like, so you're emailing people. And it's like, yes, at the end of the day, it's like even all these marketing automation software tools that are out there, it's like, yeah, marketing automation in quotes, the core function of it is email, right? Like you would never get a marketing quote unquote automation platform that doesn't send emails. Mm-hmm. It's like the main thing it does. So it's like, I think that there's a lot of ways that people try to sort of church up, if you will, mm-hmm. Emails. But it's the reason why it's cyclical and sort of its popularity is because it works. This has been one of the most tried and true methods of sort of like engaging an audience and pretty much the best one for publishers because you can mm-hmm. drive your own traffic, build relationships with your audience. And I actually do really like the summaries. You know, as a mm-hmm. publisher, you might look at that and go, I get no web traffic. Like, why would I send one of those? Some of the only ones I read are the summary ones, mm-hmm. and they'll still include links every now and then. And then, you know, there's one newsletter in particular, I only read their summaries one.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I follow the Skim, and it's like, and they send news updates, but it's like very kind of millennialized. So it's like really easy to understand. And they have links out to their website, but like I read the summaries and it gives me the information I need. And I think that builds authority with people. So like,
absolutely,
if you do want to go to their website, you believe everything you're reading. And I think that's kind of the importance of summaries. But I don't know. I think that investing even more in newsletters could be good, but I just think about all the newsletters I get in my email, like how many I delete. So it's just like, how do you gain authority, like, or gain like people's attention against like all the other newsletters out there?
Yeah. I mean, I guess from the standpoint of it, I would say everyone should probably invest in it to some degree. There's probably some exceptions. And there's always a right way to do it with your audience. You know, to a certain point, it's like investing more in it. Like you said, it's like, there is going to be a point of diminishing return where it's like, there's only so many emails people are going to want about casserole recipes or something like that. So yeah, but yeah, if you don't have a newsletter, you should take the time to start to, you know, build that strategy.
Yeah, I agree. So back to AI, we have the use of AI for SEO and content is expected to grow 5 times this year. And this is from Search Engine Land. 90% of organizations say they are prioritizing SEO in 2023 due to compounding benefits. Right now, only 10% of marketers use AI for SEO content generation, but 58% plan to use AI for content generation and SEO in 2023. So I think a lot of the caution right now is due to the, they call them hallucinations, like false answers from generative AI. And they're concerned about, you know, Google detecting the AI content and penalizing it, even though Google's outlook recently kind of softened towards that. And SEOs are focusing on 4 concerns in 2023, which is search engine updates, changing consumer behavior, technology advancements, and competitors. So, I mean, like we were saying, AI, you can't get away from it. It's expected to get into SEO, which is not surprising.
Yeah. And I think, you know, pretty much everything that you just mentioned, it's sort of what I've seen from the SEO crew on Twitter as well. And it, to me, it speaks to the biggest problem with SEO, which is they don't at all understand the underlying technologies. So like most SEOs that I talk to have a very poor understanding of like what something like Google and their 2 parts of their search engine can actually do. So you have the crawler and then you have the indexing and then you serve the results from the index. And the thing is that the same can kind of go for AI, where if they're worried that people are, or somebody is going to be able to detect that content is AI generated, there's, I mean, outside of like, if you were trying to hide it, it would be impossible from the standpoint of, there's nothing in the writing itself that, you know, like it's human grade. The thing is that the hallucination thing is very preventable. It just depends on the technology that you're using. So underneath sort of the surface of any kind of chat based, or ChatGPT or you name it, application that's generating content, there are prompts, and these prompts can basically just, they're like a filter where it's like, you can, if I'm like, Whitney, who was the 2021 Super Bowl champions? And do you know who they were?
No.
So like the thing would be is that if I ask you that question, and your only goal was to answer it and you didn't know, you would lie to me.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what ChatGPT does. Mm-hmm. But if in that I'm like, hey, Whitney, who were the 2021 Super Bowl champs? And if you don't know the answer, just say pizza or just tell me no.
Yeah.
And so you can basically keep most AI from giving you these hallucinations. Okay. The problem with ChatGPT is that to add those filters, it makes it less good of a chatbot.
Yeah.
So most of what you're seeing now in these individual tools, they have these sort of underlying filters built in and sort of frame questions more specifically because you get better results.
Okay.
So I do think that SEOs have maybe sort of like the wrong concerns, but I do think that they're right and that AI can help quite a bit with SEO, because the bigger problem that I think SEOs and just publishers in general have, all of us, and I run into it just trying to help people like get into Google Analytics these days. And in my opinion, Google Analytics has helped lead to what I think is a industry of independent owner operator websites that use less data today than they did 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that a big thing that AI can do is help people make decisions about how they use their data without ever having to look at it. Drawing reports in GA or GA4 is like, it sucks. And even the people that know how to read the data rarely use it and rarely use it like properly.
Yeah.
It's like become a vanity thing or a, yeah. Yeah, more OCD than it is actually making business decisions from the data.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is an opportunity for publishers to kind of get back to the data in a simpler format.
Yeah, I agree.
So quarterly ad spending recap, green shoots of ad spending growth will take time to bloom. This is from DigiDay. So in previous years, companies have tended to cut advertising spending during economic downturns since it's, you know, a flexible budget and it's easy to cut spending immediately. But this economic downturn seems to be different. Major brands like Kraft Heinz and Unilever have reported they are increasing ad spend in 2023, kind of, I guess, resituating themselves in these economic downturns, especially I think that they learned a lot during the pandemic, cutting their ad spending, and then now coming back, trying to do something different. So instead of cutting advertising, they're passing on this increase in commodity prices to shoppers in the belief that the shoppers will pay higher retail prices, which they will. I have already.
Yeah, I bought these cookies from the grocery store this weekend. And then when she scanned them, she was like $7.99. I was like, I'm pretty sure I've got those cookies before, like the take home and bake ones for like $2.99 or $3.99. I was like blown away.
I know, it's crazy. So while ad spend growth is definitely occurring this year, some of that is driven by inflation. So they're not spending as much as it once seems, like as it seems like once is adjusted.
Yeah.
So they're spending more, but inflation's so bad that it's actually just like adjusting. It's not as much as you would think it is.
Yeah, and there's this thing that I'm coining this phrase. So all of you out there, start using this phrase, please, and you can attribute it to me. But the thing about it is, the phrase is adflation. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I find extremely interesting is that digital advertising spending has become a larger portion of overall global ad spend over the last, I mean, it's projected to keep going, but it's linear. It's the majority. And not only that, you could say the same thing for mobile traffic. It's on the same linear trajectory. More and more of the total internet is becoming mobile, and now it's the majority. Mm-hmm. On top of that, ad spending has continued to increase. And more of it's going into digital, comes back to that first point. So you've got more digital ad spending. You've got it taking up a higher portion. So the total amount of money available for sites is going up. And then the majority of internet traffic, it continues to shift to mobile, yet mobile ad rates keep going down.
Interesting.
So you ask yourself the question, like, why is this? And it's because humans are really bad at optimizing this and seeing sort of the long view. It's why we've used AI for a long time at Azoic, is because ads become inflated. So on a mobile screen, if an ad is worth more, like, you know, in 2014, especially, you might go, well, let's just put a couple more ads in on mobile. And that doesn't help the problem. It makes it worse because it makes the value of those ads like less valuable to the advertiser. Right. If Google's measuring a campaign and seeing how many people click and buy and view and all that kind of stuff, and you've got more that's competing with, you know, those outcomes, ultimately the algorithm is going to be like, this is a cheaper ad, and it's going to automate those campaigns over time. And so I think that that's an additional problem here that's not being accounted for.
Yeah.
But on top of that, I saw something the other day, and it was like the impact of inflation on dollars spent, and it's so segmented. So like the cost of technology keeps going down. Like, you can buy a TV for half the price you could buy a TV 4, 5 to 6 years ago. Yet healthcare and health insurance are like 3 to 4 times higher.
Yeah.
And so it's like many things that are digital or technology products, the price is going down. So you're actually seeing margins get squeezed there. And that's meaning that, you know, advertising spending is cut the hardest in some of those areas. And then you have things like healthcare and insurance and things like that, where the margins are getting higher and the costs are going up. So, you know, Kraft Heinz and Unilever, like you said, they're passing that on to the consumers. So, you know, they've got more money to spend on advertising because it's a cash flow business.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that even though ad spending is down, this is kind of I don't know. I think that this was coming at some point, you know, like they can't keep cutting advertising. They have to eventually do something.
I always say at some, you can start cutting ads. And at some point, like, you know, you feel it. And do you feel it today? Do you feel it tomorrow? You don't know.
Right.
And so like, place your bets.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's all that we have for topics. Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No, not really. I think, you know, we were able to dig into some of the things that like have been a little bit more topical, like the last few days, like mm-hmm. the Slack thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really more so me and my opinions on that. But I do think that that's the sort of disruption that publishers that listen to this show are obviously very interested in the space, because we talk a lot about sort of like the bigger picture. But I do think that that's what you should be on the lookout like for, is essentially these things that are kind of emerging or piggybacking off of AI, where all of a sudden, you know, everyone is using something or, you know, finding information a different way, mm-hmm. because there will always be a role for people to create content. Mm-hmm. And you just have to understand, if you know your audience, you can find people everywhere.
Agreed. Well, you can find us on YouTube, on any platform that you can listen to podcasts on. We have a website, publisherlab.org. You can, at the top, give your suggestions for topics, or if you don't like what we're wearing, I guess you could tell us that. You know, wear brighter colors, wear, like, not as bright colors.
Yeah, whatever you like.
Whatever you like. You can tell
costumes.
Us anything. Costumes. Yeah, costumes. That could be interesting. but yeah, if you have any suggestions, you can throw it in there. And this has been another episode of the Publisher Lab.